and welcome to another episode of the Geek Whisperers podcast, a podcast that brings social media and community to the world of enterprise IT. My name's John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm Matthew Brender.
And we're here today with a pretty interesting topic, I think. We're talking about Twitter, but not just how to use Twitter or when the best time to tweet is, but really about the whole gestalt of Twitter and why we're using it and kind of how to get started. All three of us get asked a lot, how do I get started on Twitter? And the reason is, I think all three of our companies, our technical community in general, is a big user of the Twitter community, of the Twitter space. It's our kind of our floating chat room. There are many other forums. There are many other social networks where more focused or technical discussions can go on. But a surprising amount of networking goes on all year round, 24 hours a day on Twitter. It's certainly, I think it's one of the most important tools in my tool chest. Amy, Matt?
Oh, I heart Twitter. And I think it is the platform that binds us all together, if you will, because like you said, there are individual or niche platforms or communities and more power to them. There's reasons to have multiple and different, you know, sub-communities, but it is a gestalt is the, I think, a great word for it. It is an overlay.
Yeah. And the communities that are out there are, you know, playing on the gestalt, they're more than the sum of their parts. That all of us together, while we're having what feels like a very intimate conversation as the IT enterprise community that we are, we get to have it publicly in this way that just makes us discoverable. It adds so much value to our marketing strategy, but also, as we've all found, it adds a lot of personal value in the way we get to be both ourselves and also technologists at once.
Yeah, and I think we'll touch on a lot of aspects of that. But often we get asked, how do I get started on Twitter? Or I tried to start on Twitter. My boss told me to, or you told me to. And so I got on, and now what? And I read a book or something, and it told me, I'm not quite sure what to do. Do I tweet pictures of my lunch? I think people, it's really, because it's kind of a, I'm not sure. Well, maybe that be part of our discussion. I'm not quite sure why Twitter is so hard to get, but it kind of is. And so we're going to try to demystify that, talk about Twitter as a community, talk about how to introduce yourself to the land of Twitter and how to be successful integrating yourself there and really having a good time. It's really the best part of my day. It's the way I start my day and finish my day. That's kind of sad, isn't it?
No, it's not. That's so true. That's totally true for me. And I love it because I feel, I say this like the in-person adds so much, gets us so much energy in such a compact amount of time when we go to a conference. But it's that Twitterverse that gives us the sustained engagement with people and keep us in touch and more like a community, to use the word that we're all thinking of.
Yeah, and John, I'm going to challenge you a little bit when you said people ask, you know, how to get started and they're naturally comfortable there. Or, sorry, some thread you had in the early part. I think that actually, some folks do figure it out and sort of go to it natively and don't have a difficult time. I think about it like sports teams. People are always afraid they're going to be the one picked last. And some folks sort of naturally get out there and play, and some people are waiting on the sidelines and need a hand in. And there's a bunch of different strategies, I think, for coming into the community. So I think that this can offer a little something for everybody, people who are trying to figure out how to come into the community and people who are trying to figure out how to change their position in the community or maybe change how they use Twitter.
Great. Well, I've forgotten we have a guest. I haven't forgotten the guest, but so she's been waiting patiently. So let's introduce her. Our friend Sunshine Mugrabi, Sunshine Mug on Twitter. I've known for quite a while. Maybe I'll let her give a little bit of a bio. I've known her for a couple of years starting in the storage world. She's done a few different things and has been very successful. We'll get to the story in a sec, I guess. Sunshine, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Best Twitter handle ever, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It also happens to be her name.
I was going to say, I feel like she got a leg up right out of the gate there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Sunshine, I gave you a kind of a crappy intro, so you want to do a better
crappy
job?
No, it was fine. John and I met during the planning of the very first Tech Field Day event, which I was part of. I assume all of you guys know about that. It's gotten huge. I was sort of there at the birth of the event, as was John. VMware, didn't you guys offer up a space?
Indeed, we were not participants, I believe, but we did provide some space.
You provided some space for Seago, which was one of my clients. And that was such an exciting time. And it was an amazing example of how Twitter could boost a person's career, because a lot of the people I met that helped me get started with all that stuff, I met them on Twitter. I met you, John, on Twitter way before I met you in real life, didn't I?
I believe so. I think I heard about you on Twitter, and it turns out we're neighbors. So,
right, and then it turns out we live like half a mile away from each other.
So that's been very fortuitous. But I don't know, what would you call yourself? You're a PR consultant, social media consultant. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you probably wear many hats at this point.
Yeah, I wear many hats, but those are the main two.
And you are in an interesting position, and I guess we can talk about, you know, Twitter in general, but you were in a position where you were a journalist. You then had some PR clients. You were working as a PR person. You started with Zego and some other tech clients. And you decided to get on Twitter. You decided that you were going to get yourself on Twitter. But you're not necessarily, you weren't necessarily a tech person before that, although I assume you were comfortable with it.
Yeah, I got on Twitter in, I think, 2007. I was still working pretty early. Maybe it was 2008. I'm not sure. But I was still working at a PR firm at the time. I had been a tech reporter. I worked at Red Herring, and I moved into PR. I worked for a PR firm. I made a plan that I would work for a PR firm as an employee for a year so that I could get the hang of it before I went off on my own. And when that year was up, it was right when the recession was hitting, and it was kind of terrifying. And I took one client with me, which was Ocarina Networks, which was a storage startup. It basically did dedupe and compression. I don't know if you guys heard about it. It's now part of Dell. Mm-hmm. And that was my introduction to storage. And I had this wonderful mentor there, Carter George, who sadly recently passed away. And I took them with me as a social media client. So that was my only client leaving and going out into the world on my own as this recession was hitting. And it was a huge amount of pressure on me because I had to make this thing work. You know, I just couldn't fail. Like, I had to get out there on Twitter and make a huge splash about this tiny company that nobody had heard of at a time when there really weren't very many storage startups. That wasn't it was mostly like EMC, NetApp, you know, big storage companies.
Right. There are a lot more these days.
Now storage startups are like a normal part of the ecosystem because we've got Flash and the cloud and all this exciting stuff. But at the time it was like a storage startup. What are you talking about? And then I had to get on there and somehow connect with these scary, big, macho guys from EMC and NetApp who were like brilliant and knew everything about all this technology. I didn't understand any of it, you know, and somehow I had to like make an impression or I was dead.
And did you know any of these storage bloggers or anything like that?
No, I didn't know anything. I just started a blog for Ocarina and got on Twitter as Ocarina, but also as I realized as myself, I needed to be sort of an emissary for them. Anyway, you had a question, Amy.
Yeah, how much did you do before you had to do it? Like, were you doing sort of passive listening for a little bit, or was this really like 0 to 65?
It was 0 to 65. I mean, I had done a little passive listening, but really, I mean, I just sort of went, I got on Twitter because everybody at my firm wanted to be social media forward, but I really hadn't done much with it. And then suddenly I realized if I'm going to make this Ocarina blog thing work, I also have to make Twitter work. I have to get to know these people. And I have to be, luckily the company was sort of storage agnostic. So we were like friends with everyone except NetApp. We hated NetApp, but everybody else was great.
I'm sorry. I have to like that a little bit.
I think we have to get some balance in the force there.
Because NetApp had like the same basic product. It was dedupe for NAS, and it was the only, really the only other one, that and StoreWise, which is now part of IBM. But everyone else was our friend, EMC.
Well, Sunshine, already you've hit on one thing, which is not I needed to get publicity for my blog, or I needed to get more traffic for my blog, or I needed to.
Right.
I mean, certainly you said you want to raise the profile for your client, but you said I need to make friends with people.
Yeah, I realized very quickly that I was going to get nowhere if I thought I got to promote this thing. This had to be a just getting into the network, getting into the community. And, that was going to be my strategy. I just knew that was the way to go.
And I don't know. That seems to be, just to stop for a sec, that seems to be a common approach to Twitter. I got to use it to get my stuff out. Is that, Matt, Amy, for you guys as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Use it to get the stuff out. And that's usually the first thing I try to guide people away, that I have a slide that's from Field of Dreams with the baseball on the field, and it just says, it's not going to happen, or I forget exactly how I word it. But there is no Field of Dream moments on social. If you build another Twitter account, no one will care. What people do care about is if you're trying to engage with them personally.
Sunshine's great point. Actually, I think I'm sitting here sort of chewing on this, is because I was on Twitter quietly, very quietly, for like 2 years, and it was not something I wanted to do. I know me, quiet for 2 years, but I didn't have any reason to be there. I didn't get it. And then suddenly it was my job, and I went, so I had this lag time where I was very lackadaisical, and then I had to go 0 to 65 because they're like, oh, hey, you're going to go do the social media for VMworld. Good luck. And you might want to be on the Twitters a little more actively. So it was pushed rather than pulled. It was by force. And I think the other thing for me, it was a project, and it sounds maybe like this was true for you, Sunshine. It wasn't about you. It was about this thing you had to do for your job, which makes it easier, I think. And I don't know what you think, John and Matt. It makes it easier to be brave. You can go in and swing with the heavy hitters when it's not about you, because then it's sort of not about you. I mean, you have to be there. You have to be present. I don't know. What do y'all think?
That's fascinating, because I would get the opposite response, where unless I know I'm allowed to just be myself, whatever that means online, and I've slowly figured that out. But unless I know I can be myself, I feel like I've got to put a filter on. And that's actually probably one of the most common things people ask or address me with. Like, how do I split my professional and personal into two different Twitter accounts and do that well? I mean, because people think they have to. And I try to get them away from that to that just be yourself thing.
Having to
represent a brand is that's a bigger thing.
But you have a mission. There's something about having a mission that made me braver.
Maybe it's like having a little bit of a script instead of just being a stand-up improv or something.
Because Sunshine said she had to do this thing. So there was no backing off. There was no getting tired of it. She had a mission.
Yeah. So Sunshine, how did you approach this then?
Well, it's interesting when you talk about just being yourself, because that was another thing I realized very quickly, was just being myself wasn't necessarily going to work. Mm. Not to say that I should be inauthentic in any way, but what I realized is my focus was on the other people. If I just be myself, then I just chatter away about myself and how all the fabulous things that I do and that I like. And I realized I couldn't do that, because this wasn't a community of people who necessarily was going to automatically have that rapport with me.
Oh, okay. That's a very valid point.
It's kind of Dale Carnegie, sort of a Dale Carnegie thing. The most fascinating. How to Win Friends and Influence People. The most fascinating person at the room is the person that listens the most. Oh, you're such a fascinating person. All you do is listen.
Right. So I actually used, and it's funny, John, you are the only person who's ever asked me, did you use a technique?
Okay. Well, there's some context to that. But anyway, keep on
going. There is some context, but it is very interesting, because nobody ever asked me, did you use a technique?
Well.
And I definitely did use a technique.
Okay.
Well, do tell.
Tell us your judo secrets.
My judo secrets.
Just between the four of us.
Just between the four of us. Nobody else will know.
Nobody will know.
Well, as I said, I was really up against the wall. And as it happened, while I was striking out on my own and everything else, I was taking these classes in neurolinguistics. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of this. NLP.
Yep. Yes.
And what I was learning was what they call rapport skills. And this is for in-person, sitting usually, or on the phone at most, sitting down with somebody, how to get into rapport with them.
Huh.
And there's a whole bunch of techniques around this.
So what would be some examples of how you'd establish rapport with somebody in person?
So in person, for example, one of the key techniques they teach is mirroring. physically mirroring somebody. So you put yourself into the same physical position that they're in. As if they're leaning. Well, you don't want to go crazy with it.
That's subtle.
Subtly. Even more to the point, if they lean back, you lean back. Mm-hmm. And you know, the worst advice you will ever get in business and in communication is lean forward to show you're interested. This is the worst advice.
Why?
Because the only time you're ever going to do that is when somebody's leaning back.
Oh, and so then you're not mirroring.
Then you lean forward. You're pushing. Yeah, you're doing the exact opposite of mirroring. You're pushing yourself into their space when they're trying to back up out of your space.
Well, what's funny is you'll notice that often we do that unconsciously.
Yep.
Somebody leans back. You lean back. They shift their weight. You shift your weight.
If you're already in rapport with somebody, if you already feel that connection, you will notice you're mirroring them in all kinds of ways. And if you're not in rapport, you'll be doing that opposite thing.
Hmm. And when I notice that, it kind of freaks me out because it makes me very self-conscious.
Really?
Well, and I don't know if I should admit this because just the four of us here, but yeah. In my past life, I worked for a publishing company and we published a number of books on NLP. So I'm fairly familiar with the technique myself.
Right.
And it really works in person. And sometimes when I get bored, and again, never admit this, I'll try it just to sort of see, like a little more amped up, a little more focused. And it's amazing how effective it is. And I think it makes so much sense to me. And I'm fascinated to hear how you've taken some of those techniques that they really talk about in person and took them to the Twitterverse. Because it's that kind of mirroring, that listen first. And it's got to be sincere. You can't be this phony who goes off and, you know, ha, 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 I got the best of people. You know, that would be not sustainable.
No. Just the opposite. It gave me that flexibility. When you're really in rapport with somebody, you're actually more able to be authentic, is my experience. You can be real with them. You don't have to feel like you're being a people pleaser. I sometimes have a tendency to be a people pleaser. It's not a quality of mine that I like. And when I'm in rapport, I tend to be more direct and honest with the person.
Interesting.
Because we're in rapport, so it's okay. It's like we have
that
flexibility.
Well, Sunshine, we've gone into you hit it in this way that I'm just thinking about all of my human interactions in the last as long as I can think, and seeing how often I do that naturally versus consciously versus unconsciously. But that aside, focusing on the Twitterverse and the sort of the syntax in which you get to have a conversation, the @s and the hashtags and whatnot, like how do you take something mirroring that so far we've just talked about physically and boil that down to a conversation that's going to be just text?
Yeah, good question. So one thing I do is I pay attention to what people are saying. So what words seem to be really important to them, and I mirror those words back to them.
Like technical terms or
not necessarily, because a lot of conversations on Twitter, even among technical people, are more just conversational about stuff, about life.
Yep.
And so I pay attention to what's important to them. Mm-hmm. I use those same words back in my tweet.
So for instance, if you were talking to Amy, you might mention bacon.
Bacon.
Repeatedly.
And you'd be surprised what sometimes pops out. And like the way I was trained, they said, pay attention to what seems to come out 3D from a person. And this will happen with tweets all the time. Once you get used to, as you said, the syntax, the style, it's actually in a way easier with a tweet because it's only those 140 characters or whatever. And so you listen to the person and you start to get a sense and you pay attention to what is it that they keep going to, what keeps popping out in 3D, what's important to them.
In 3D. Okay. So you listen, you find some words that they use or phrases or areas that they love to talk about every day.
Yep.
And how do you keep that sincere? Like, how do you not feel like that could be – well, my instinct is to say like, oh, that sounds rather insincere, but I know it's more than that, but I think my knee-jerk reaction is to think that that sort of – intentional mirroring idea would somehow take away from the engagement. So how do you respond when somebody has the feeling that I just went through?
Well, I know this is an example of an in-person, so bear with me, but a friend of mine, actually a friend, fellow storage geek blogger person, I told him about that I use NLP all the time. I use these techniques and I use mirroring. And we were sitting, we were at this like this event during VMworld, and we were sitting side by side, and I said, I use this mirroring technique, like right now I'm mirroring you, you see? And he goes, yeah, that stuff doesn't work on me. I don't like that.
Yes.
And I said, yeah, I know. I'm just doing it because it makes me feel comfortable. Because when I'm in rapport, then I relax. So, you know, if it doesn't bother you, I'll just go ahead and mirror you. And he was like, yeah, it doesn't bother me. It just doesn't affect me. Anyway, we got to talk about something else. Then later, every time I saw him, he was like, that conversation that we had at that event was so deep. That was one of the best conversations I've ever had.
Oh, and not about mirroring, but about the other things you were talking about.
No, as we – right. All the other things we talked about for the next half hour, 45 minutes or whatever that we were sitting there was very deep because we were in rapport. And so we had sort of dropped our shallow level.
Mm.
And I had been very open with him and saying, I'm doing this mirroring because it makes me comfortable. And sure enough – what happens when you get into rapport is you actually can get more authentic and more real.
That's so fascinating. I feel like I know I do that without ever using the same verbiage that mm-hmm. we're talking about here. The in rapport, this idea, and Amy actually pointed it out perfectly, this idea of being willing to, you know, make a little bit of a fool of yourself or really put yourself out on the limb of a branch, even if it might break, just to show that it's, we'll all get up and be okay. That sort mm-hmm. of like being comfortable in your own skin makes everyone else more comfortable.
Hmm.
It seems like that's an essential element of what you're talking about, that sort of just that willingness to, I don't know, take a risk with it. But mm-hmm. the way you're approaching it's actually kind of the opposite, but it's having the same effect.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. So, Matt, yeah. I think this point, and Sunshine, his references, I have definitely said in any number of things, sort of social modeling, I found that when I assure people that you won't have to worry about being the biggest fool in the room because I've already got it covered, then people can relax. So if they're worried about, again, that analogy, being the last kid picked for the team, the one who's going to fall down, the one who's going to get hit in the head with the dodgeball, all of these things have happened to me. Then it's all good. I've got that covered. And I think that's one technique, but it doesn't mean you can't use both and sort of interchange them.
Sunshine, by the time I think we met on Twitter before the actual event of Tech Field Day, the first
mm-hmm.
one.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you were like, you in my consciousness, you went from I had no idea who you were, and then all of a sudden, all these storage people knew you, and you were talking mm-hmm. to them, and you were mm-hmm. like, in with them, and it was like you were making jokes, and it was all of a sudden like you were Sunshine, and they were getting together, and where's Sunshine, and who, what would Sunshine say, and it, you just to me you appeared as if like a fairy or a mushroom out of nowhere, and so how did you get from are there some tactics?
Because, yeah, I mean, I was terrified. First of all, I want to say that as much as I say that these rapport techniques help me relax and everything, I was so intimidated by that storage crowd.
Like, will they retweet you? Will they like you?
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just like you're going into the deep end of – and this was early enough in Twitter that just being on Twitter at all gave you a certain amount of something. But still, these people – I would read a blog post by one of these guys. And I say guys because it was mostly guys back then. It's gotten more even, but – I would read a blog post. I wouldn't understand one word. Not even the ands or the this is. I mean, just like completely. It was all so beyond me. Having, you know, I don't have a really truly technical background, as you said earlier. I just have done journalism and PR in tech, totally different level. And storage is so diehard, as you guys know. And so, yeah, it was terrifying. So how did I do it? I mean, it was mostly just really, really being aware of how terrified I was. And I would wake up sweating and I would go back and I'd read all of my tweets to see, did I say anything that would bother anyone? You know, like I went to that extreme of paying attention to every word I said, which I think actually was good. I think people who think, oh, I'm just going to jump into the stream and they don't get instant validation and they back out of it, it's too bad, because it does take some practice. It takes, once you get even one retweet or response from somebody, the adrenaline high is worth it all. But yeah, I mean, it required that I sort of hang in there and throw myself out there and feel like a fool a lot.
And we've been talking kind of about the emotional content of it, but in some of the tactics were like you'd tweet out a link and say, hey, you might be interested in this, or you'd jump into a conversation that was going on with your own comments.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't tweet out a lot of links because I didn't. It was at that time I saw that the Oak Arena blog and my own personal Twitter and the Oak Arena Twitter were all intertwined for me. Mm-hmm. And so I did tweet if I put up a blog post, and sometimes my blog posts were just like, I had an interesting Twitter conversation today. Mm-hmm. Or like I would interview people on Twitter. Like one of the first things I did was I interviewed Stephen Foskett, the Tech Field Day guy, on Twitter. I was like, I'm going to do a Twitter view, you know? And so I was trying to come up with ways, you know, to integrate these two things, because at the time the blog, there was so much blogging going on. It was a very active blogging time. This is, you know, 2008, around then. And so blogs were more front and center then, I think.
Mm-hmm. More than social networks and other things.
Yeah. So it was all interconnected. But other than that, no, I didn't do a lot of you might be interested in this link.
Yeah.
Because, again, I was trying to get into conversation with people. So I would lurk. It's kind of like going to a cocktail party, you know, where you lurk on the edge, figure out what they're talking about, and then you just kind of subtly walk in and try to come up with something that might interest them in the topic area. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was actually something we should pull out there. That it's about starting a conversation and
or joining one.
Yeah, joining a conversation. Yeah, that's indeed. And again, I'm thinking of my colleagues who ask me, "How do I get started on Twitter? I don't know what to do." I think part of that is because they don't know why they're going on Twitter. They've just been told they should.
Yeah,
right. And the whole point, I think, is to enter into a community or several communities. I think. I don't know.
Well, and that's back to the idea of the mission. So in my case, again, it was thrust upon me, and it quickly became something I wanted to do. The people were interesting. The conversations were interesting. It's a community I wanted to be part of, but I was definitely kind of shoved into it. But I had a mission, you know, I had something I needed to accomplish. And I think I've watched people kind of come onto the scene or come into the community, and I can almost tell when they have a stronger drive to join the community than other people. So But you would see this in any kind of community forming, I think. Some people drive in it faster, some people go slower, people bring their different personalities, and eventually it equalizes. It's the don't flinch model. It definitely, like Sunshine was saying, I think I have to reiterate and bring that point out again, that you have to go back in and go back in and go back in.
I love it. And you both addressed the being pushed by your job, the corporate, or like seeing that your career is going to go this way where you should be on Twitter, and that's your mission is to find where you need to be on Twitter. While my direction was more of the personal need, where I was missing that sense of community in my day job. I've heard so much that there's conversation happening out there, and I was striving for that sense of community engagement and finding that online. Whether it's a personal or professional mission, like the idea of going in with a mission is kind of a nice starting point.
Yeah. You know, Twitter, because you craft your own set of people you're following, there definitely is a certain amount of organic nature to it, and it really does depend on your purpose. I actually got started in Twitter twice. I think we tried to pull it off at VMworld in 2007 maybe, and I started to follow a bunch of celebrities or, you know, web celebrities, and that's right. Who I followed first. And that was just really boring because they just were kind of talking to each other and, you know, it had nothing to do with me or my job. And I actually I unfollowed everybody and I started over with VMware community people. And that's when it clicked for me, like, oh, okay, this is really cool. And so I think it really depends on, you know, the, if you sign up to Twitter, they'll tell you to follow who? What, Barack Obama and Justin Bieber? I don't know. So throw that all that crap out.
Yeah.
Like, totally.
That, I think that's a great point, too. You can have a mission, but if it's not one that resonates with you, it won't be sustainable.
Yeah.
So it would be transactional if you were told to go in, you've got a tweet for VMworld, or, you know, you need to cover EMC World, or whatever. You know, that's a finite mission. And if it doesn't catch fire or you don't connect with the community, and again, I think these are some great tactics for how to connect, because sometimes I hear people say, I don't get it. I don't feel like I've connected. It, different tiering. So some people are not sure why to get on. In some ways, we're kind of bypassing that question here, which I think is fine. That's for another day. We're assuming you want to get on in some way.
Yeah. Amy, what techniques did you use as you were introducing yourself to people that you all of a sudden had to prepare for VMworld? How did you enter that community?
Well, it's interesting because I just did a talk this week on sexism in IT, which will sound like off-roading a little bit, but Sunshine already alluded to, you know, we do operate in a predominantly male industry in this tribe, this community, this sub-community. And so to just blast into the scene, I'm here, you know, it doesn't work. I don't know that works in many scenes, but it certainly wouldn't necessarily work here. So for me, it was a strategy of being introduced. And I don't know that I realized at the time. I mean, I had to stick to it, but I was definitely jumped into the gang, if you will, by Brian Gracely. And we did a series of videos for VMworld. Again, very, very tactical. So it was for the show that I needed to kind of get on board and start to listen and get to know people in the community. So I followed the people that he followed and then figured out the relationship there and watched, listened well before I participated. But then suddenly he had this idea of shooting these joke videos as the lead-in to VMworld. And I'm the sort of person, and you guys, you know me, I will try anything. I will that I don't think will kill me. And so I'm like, sure, bring leg warmers to work. No problem. And that was my way in. And it was so ridiculous. Again, talk about ridiculous entries. Like, I went from not understanding Twitter at all, in some ways, not really participating, watching, seeing the community form, to being the girl in the leg warmer video. And it was...
I gotta see this video.
Yeah, I'm Googling frantically right now.
I can already see the show notes going downhill.
Yeah, well, that certainly is putting yourself out there.
It seems, in retrospect, when I tell the story, like, oh, well, that wasn't a shy way to enter, because I don't necessarily think that that's who I am. But at the time, I didn't think about it, because I didn't understand 100% about how the community worked. It was just nice, again, to have someone who did understand the community, who had a good idea, and it was different, it was funny, it was fun to make, and, you know, jump into the gang. And then I could see who he engaged with and sort of how he did it. And then there were other folks on the team. It was a core team that has since then been distributed to the many wins. And I sort of looked at who they followed and how they engaged. So it's a pyramid scheme. And I did a lot of what Sunshine said. I listened a lot. I asked questions. And then the more positive responses I got, the braver I became. And the more I met people in person, then the bolder I became. And there's another story to that, too. I don't know if we'll have time to tell it tonight. And I'll stop talking because I've been talking too long.
Actually, I feel like the thing that we haven't talked about, which is the thing that I loved the most about, especially the early days, is how much humor and silliness and creativity there was and still is. But it really was like such an open-ended time. And I never would have dreamed in a million years that getting involved with storage and enterprise technology would turn out to be this avant-garde art experience where people were funny and crazy and the videos were wacky. And Mark Farley, for example, who we talked about, he was doing some crazy experimental stuff on that 3PAR blog. I don't know if you guys remember this. Video, like, he had his thing he put on his steering wheel. He did video. There were some hilarious music things he did.
He did crazy music videos, weird video effects. He was having fun.
Really weird. He was having so much fun. And it created this environment where you could be experimental and silly and crazy and wacky and funny, and having a sense of humor turned out to be a huge advantage for me. I do think, John, that this is one of the reasons why I became like sort of a semi, you know, known person, is because I was willing and I enjoyed joking around. I will joke around forever. I will just continue to joke around until you make me stop. So that works so well in the context of Twitter.
Yeah. And it's weird, right? Because that, and maybe that's what puts some people off, because that's not a normal corporate stance.
Right.
Especially in marketing, right? When you're on marketing.
Yeah, see, I didn't have any, I have no background. I don't know anything about how to be a normal person at a normal company. I mean, I was a reporter.
I'm sorry, I appreciate that.
I had one straight job in my life, which was the PR firm for 1 year. And it was kind of a wacky PR firm. It wasn't like for totally, you know, corporate people. So I just had no, yeah, I came in like, I already was pretty out there anyway.
Well,
so I just jumped right in.
We've done personality scoring in our corporate marketing department, for instance, and the social media team is on the opposite end of the quadrant than the rest of the programs people, right? We are not necessarily normal people in normal corporate jobs.
So what is the differences?
I don't actually remember, but it's in terms of like creativity and structure and trying new things, and as opposed to like, you know, liking process and being good at organizing and, you know, that sort of stuff.
The certainty introvert versus the willing to risk everything extrovert. Yeah that seems pretty standard.
But not even extroverted. Like, I don't even feel particularly extroverted, and none of us are. I know all you people.
Marketers are mainly introverts, just for the record. Like, statistically speaking, marketers are more likely to be introverts. And one of the reasons they're good at it is they know how to stop, listen, and watch people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there is this aspect just of play. There is this aspect of play on Twitter that is very important. You're right, I think. I mean, Amy,
who amongst the four of us would possibly say, oh, we fit in naturally to a very strict corporate environment. I mean, who on this call is going to raise their hand?
I'm still shocked,
like,
I'm not fired. Every day.
Every day, I think, people smile and they say things to you like, you know, who in the sound of our podcast voice has been told, well, that's certainly different. That's a very creative idea.
What do you do exactly?
And maybe that's, again, we're sort of teaching the people, but I think about folks who are a little more comfortable fitting in. And I would say, and again, I'm going to go back to a Troyer quote I love, which is, you've been more successful the more John Troyer you've been, the more successful you've been. I seriously think about that quote all the time. Number one, it's hilarious. And number two, just, it's so hard, I think, for people to realize this is a medium where, yes, somebody might fuss at you for tweeting a picture of your breakfast, but you know what? I do it a lot. And yes, people have fussed at me. Some people who shall remain nameless even unfollowed me, potentially because of my breakfast pictures. But that's okay. You got to be thick-skinned and you kind of keep going and be yourself if that's who you are. And if you're truly irritating, if you're truly mean, the community will either weed you out or they will let you know politely. And in most cases, I've seen people get corrected politely by the community. It's not in this mean, vicious attack way. And to be fair, we have a very, I love Sunshine how you described it. It's a smart, vibrant, interesting, creative group. It's okay to be yourself on Twitter. And if you don't find that tribe, go find that tribe that is smart, comfortable, creative. Who are you going to learn from? Why would you join a tribe of horrible, awful people? I don't follow the celebrities either. Not that I should let my mind leap from horrible, awful people to celebrities, but they don't live my life. They don't understand me. We don't have anything to engage with. And I don't want to just watch celebrity tweets. I don't watch celebrity news. I don't want to watch them on this forum either. I like real people.
Yep. The other thing that's kind of interesting that we haven't talked about is that's important, perhaps more than interesting, is that this is also a practice. This is a daily practice, or it's a regular practice. You cannot come in, seagull, and go out. So Sunshine, I mean, was that also part of it? I mean, you have to be present and you have to do it frequently.
Yeah. It did get to the point where my husband was saying things like, you cannot tweet before you get out of bed. You're not allowed anymore. No more.
It's not a rule in my house. But
and also, while we're shopping at the grocery store, it's not fair that all you do is walk around tweeting while I have to do all the actual shopping. He did say that as well. And I tweeted it.
A woman after my own heart.
I have to say, though, that it is a stream. Not to disagree with you, John, but it's a stream, and you should be able to dip into the stream and leave the stream and go back to the stream.
Yes. You don't have to be there all the time, but my point is you can't So let me give you a counterexample of something that I saw this week.
All right.
And this is an example of a person, a very nice person, coming into a party and just starting to like shout, not being able to make small talk, not being able to make faded conversation and start to engage with people. This is a company. They shall remain nameless. They're a very nice company. I like people in the company. I like some of their products, but they're a large company. And what happened, what I noticed just the other day was they made a very well-intentioned outreach to the VMware community. They went into the VMware community site and posted a blog and said, hey, we're new here, but, you know, I'm the product manager and I'm here and this is, you know, Joe, and I'm really interested in what you have to say about our product because you may have used it. You know, I'm here for you. It was very good, but he kind of posted it in a weird place and he had never been on the community before. And then he jumped on Twitter and said, hey, VExperts, what do you think of our product? And again, without prior interaction with the VExperts, for one thing, I don't think anybody heard him because I don't think he had many followers. For another thing, no one knew him. So it was kind of like just coming into a party and being like, hi, I'm from ABC. What do you think about our new show? It's like, well, who are you and why are you in my party? And I watched your show, but... And then I think they did something on Reddit too, and actually they were very brave because actually the thread turned into a conversation about somebody else's product. But, you know, that was an example of being kind of in the real life that those would have been kind of socially awkward situations, and they wouldn't. And in fact, on online world, they didn't go well either. But and I think they had they obviously had very good intentions and were following all the rules that people gave them, but they didn't realize. I don't know. That's where I brought up the practice thing. They really probably should have come in and hung out for a month first.
Well, here's the thing. I think our social relationships, it's social media echoes our other social relationships where it's like if you have a friend who may be rather derelict at times and disappear and they only call when they're asking you for help with something like moving or to watch their cat or something like that. Like you're going to start seeing them calling and not be really interested in picking up. Mm-hmm. And the sort of dipping in, dipping out, I think there you have to be willing to give more than you expect back and be there more consistently than just when you want something. It's the same thing with any good dyadic relationship. We're talking about all this social psychology, the idea of having a relationship with any other person. A good, healthy dyadic relationship is going to be both ways, where you're both willing to give, you're both willing to respect, and you're not there just for what you're going to get out of it.
I actually love that. And one of the things I'm thinking about is I've had these conversations with a lot of people, and I often hear people say, I don't know, I just do it, I don't think about it. And I think there are people who come to it naturally. I think there are other people who will become more natural as they practice. So I like the concept of daily practice, because I will joke about the tweet a day plan, just to get people, again, build a little muscle memory if they are hesitant, but to not feel like they have to be an addict, or I prefer power user. Mm-hmm. But I can stop at any time. Yeah. But I love that. I love that concept, Matt. I think that analogy really works if people sort of think it through. In the end, Twitter is a platform for similar. I mean, we can talk about this. It is different than real life. And I don't think it's a replacement for real life. And, you know, I've certainly blogged about this topic. I ask this all the time. But it does function like a community. And I think that you become a little bit of that hermit down the street if you don't show up at some regular cadence, and you can decide what's right and comfortable for you. But I love that idea of give a little more than you expect to get back.
Mm-hmm. Always.
I had an interesting transitional thing happen where I sort of moved out of storage. And what do you do? This was an interesting thing I had to sort of figure out. I was
the movement
involved.
Of rapport.
Right. So I was so involved with that community. And then I was no longer working with Ocarina, and I was kind of moving out of storage in general. But like I had made real friends, I felt, on that platform. But a lot of their discussions were about stuff that I no longer was keeping up with, and it wasn't really relevant. And there was a sort of weird, awkward period. Mm-hmm. I don't have like a great, perfect answer for that.
Well, I'm sure just like real life, you still follow some people and other people you don't.
I follow almost everybody
okay.
that I met through the storage community, because I still consider them my friends. And why would I unfollow them? That would be kind of actively cutting them off.
That's a good point.
But yeah, and I've added a few new people. I mean, it's strange. I'm still sort of following it all. And I do have a couple of clients who are generally in that space, but I'm not doing the active social media involvement in that space anymore like I was. So it's been an interesting transition. And then you get this really amazing experience of Twitter for me is you sort of have this sedimentary layers of things you've gone through and interests you've followed, and then the strange overlappings.
Yes. And it's, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's odd how people know people. But yes, I have many communities that I follow.
Like I have a lot of stuff around food and wine, which apparently, Amy, you have an overlap there as well.
Who knew that bacon and virtualization were so intertwined? But I have certainly learned about that. And I have these weird moments where I write a food blog and people will suddenly come out of the data center side of my life into the food blog side of my life. And of course, people eat. But it's one of these shocking things when I post my menus, what I eat every week. And I end up having conversations with people I work with about what I had for dinner on Wednesday, which is strange.
Again, putting yourself out there.
But yeah, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, right, you can see that. That was my out loud voice. Because you sort of forget, and at a certain point, you forget people can see that or are paying attention, and they'll pick up a thread. And it's always great. It's never been a bad situation, but it's just surprising.
Well, Sunshine, we talked a little, Amy was talking a little bit about the naturals at this versus people who have been taught. I mean, have you formulated any other, we talked about mirroring and we talked about a few other things. I don't know if we labeled them as such. Any other particular techniques or anything like that? Have you?
Right. And I like that you distinguish between naturals and people who need to learn, because actually I am in the second category. I was not a natural.
Mm-hmm. You're very good at it now.
Well, thank you, John. But I think that's important, because I wonder how many people are a natural. It is a learning curve. And this idea that you're supposed to just instantly be good at it, just like the report trainings that I do now, that's the whole core of it, is that it's learnable and teachable. Rapport and feeling comfortable with other people and feeling comfortable being a public speaker or being on social media, this stuff is learnable and teachable. You break it down. You figure out what is the difference that makes the difference? You boil down what that is. And a lot of it comes down to this mirroring and matching thing, figuring out, you know, because we're essentially, the philosophy is most of our brain is still an animal brain. We're herd animals. We're zebras in a herd. And we want to know, am I with like kind?
Plus or minus some gray matter. But yeah, you hit the core of it.
You know, we're just...
we're probably more monkey brain than you think.
We have this wonderful creative human brain, but if our critter brain has decided, oh, this isn't a safe place, there's a lion among the zebras, we react.
I often feel that way around salespeople.
Yeah. So this is why the really advanced sales training, they actually teach you these kind of rapport techniques, because otherwise, yeah, you're going to get that, you know, I'm not among like kind. And if you do feel you're among like kind and the critter brain calms down, then you're in a completely new place with people. Then you can start to have that fun and that flexibility and that joking around and that whole wonderful human experience of rapport. So the techniques do work. I know it sounds a little strange. I use a technique in order to be authentic with people.
But I love that you're talking about comfort, because one of the things I wanted to jump in and ask is a question that I get asked a lot, and I would like to hear how you guys all address it, guys being a non-gendered term. When people say, how do I get more followers?
I believe you, before the podcast, you said you were asked that today.
I was asked that this week. And I feel like I need to answer the question as it was asked, to be honest. And so I said, well, consistency, you got to show up. And they replied back. And again, we're starting to try to mirror. And he says, so frequency is important. And I was like, wait. But it's not just spam the free earth. You have to, you know, it has to be not just consistent, but it has to be meaningful. You have to, and I did the classic. I said, you need to evaluate your Twitter stream and decide if you would follow yourself. if you are putting out things that you just, if you irritate yourself and wouldn't follow yourself, then you might want to change some things. It's not just frequency. It's also content and what you have to say. And I'm hesitant even in saying that advice because I've done it to myself and it can make you a little nuts. It can make you, so Sunshine, I was interested to hear you say, self-conscious much? To have you say at the beginning that you went back and evaluated all of your tweets, I would actually be under my podcasting table right now in a huddle if I did that at that level. But I spot check myself. It's a difficult question to answer because I appreciate the place from whence it comes. But if I had had more time to dive into the question, sort of upon consideration, because truth be told, I was on the way to the ladies' room. So you never know when you'll be asked these questions. It might not be the ideal time to ask or answer. But at least they can follow me in. I've heard other stories where people have gotten followed in to answer these questions. So what do you say? I sort of want to say it's more about the engagement you have than the number of followers you have. I understand wanting to broaden your audience, but I followed way more people than followed me for quite a long time because my job was to listen. And I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I think if you look at your follower count, you can become insane, basically, make yourself nuts.
I want to throw my strategy out there. I have a bit of a troubleshooting tree, and then I want John to give his wisdom to it. So I start from a location where if somebody asks, how do I get more followers? My first question is, why are you after more followers? I know a lot of people in a lot of different worlds than enterprise tech that have way more followers way quicker than any of us. That said, their followers...
Matt, we have to add that link to the... that again, Nick Howell just shared with me about how to... somebody created a fake personality and they had like 90,000 followers because they bought them. So there's all these links we need to add to the podcast. So
Sure. Yeah, and I know of a couple. Just pretend you're someone famous. Like, change the name of your account, change the picture for a little
pretend
bit.
Pretend you're someone famous.
No, I'm serious. I say it tongue in cheek, recognizing that that's not what they're.
Oh, that's
after,
how to get more followers. I see. That's your sarcastic answer. Gotcha.
Yeah,
I wasn't following.
It's more. I think of it like a gut check. Like, why are you actually after followers? I try not to be sarcastic just for the sake of sarcastic.
So if I set up a Twitter account called Fake Troyer, do you think I would get?
I don't know if you'd get very many.
I bet I would.
I have two fake accounts. I have two fake accounts, so I think we need to. I think Troyer needs Fake Troyer.
I don't know what Fake Troyer would talk about.
But anyway, that's where I start. But really, we get into a conversation about exactly what you're pointing to, Amy, where it's about the engagement you have. And I keep using this metaphor of think like you're going to a dinner party and you're only there with, like, say I just go with you, John, and you're introducing me to a bunch of people. I have no idea who they are. But I look for opportunities, right? I know you. I know if you brought me there, there must be other people you're interested in me getting to know. And you're talking to them. You might briefly introduce me. But I always talk about, like, the at symbols, like a brief introduction. Or if, like, people are talking and you want to say something, like, it's the same way of, like, making a boisterous laugh and joining in the conversation with your own story. Or, like, reflecting on their story. Like, it's very much like a dinner party to me online.
That's a great point that you made, Matt. I did use that technique as well. I looked for people who I knew and who they were having conversations with. And then I tried to meet those people. So that was the way I grew my network as well.
Yeah.
Also, like, the strategy that gets more engagement is continuing to open up and talk about things of interest to your audience. So know your audience and then feed them. Usually the best way to feed them today is actually through having a consistent and quality blog. And which leads back, it's kind of the opposite of what, Sunshine, what you were saying you started with. The roles have kind of reversed, that you can start with social and really build some presence and rapport through a blog.
Yeah, you can, and I just started mine back up again. I don't know that you have to have a blog. You have to
give people stuff
that's interesting, whether it's some people are funny, some people have observations on the day's goings-on. A lot of people in the tech world, you know, will tweet out links that they find interesting. If I tweet a link, usually doesn't mean I necessarily agree with it, but I think it's worth reading. I read a lot more than I tweet about. It's a legit question, though, I think, Amy. How do I get more followers? Because more followers means you have a bigger footprint. You have a bigger personal platform. You are talking to you're at a bigger party. I can understand the drive for it. I agree. If you pay attention to it, it'll drive you nuts. Sunshine, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I do think you have to ask, not in a sarcastic way, but you want to ask that serious question. What is your goal? what is it that you want to accomplish here? You know, for me, it's never been about getting a lot of followers because I'm in a context where it's really just about quality and about getting to know interesting people in realms that I'm into. So for a long time, it was just storage. And if I'd had 15 of the most interesting top storage people, I wouldn't have even cared beyond that. As you said, it's a legitimate question. What are you trying to accomplish? Why do you want these followers? You know, I think when people say, well, I have to get on Twitter and then I have to get followers, when they're thinking like that, they're already in the wrong consciousness about the whole thing.
You know
thing.
What? That brings us back to the point that we started with, that going into Twitter with a mission, and maybe we can even add to the context of a reasonable, an appropriate mission that's focused on people and not the numbers around what you're doing with your Twitter account, is a good place to start.
Yeah,
I really sincerely feel for anybody who's being pushed by their employer to make stuff happen. Whoever that company was that you were talking about, John, I could just see the meeting. All right, now you need to get out there and you need to, you know, get people to immediately respond. There's these bloggers, you see. There's these experts. You got to get them to respond. I could just see what happens to this poor fellow who then has to go in and go, I know I'm new here, but...
Yeah, but very well meaning. Well, maybe we can close it up with this. Now, I agree. Your employer shouldn't be telling you to go out and get there. But I'm always telling my colleagues, I'm thinking about the folks over in our PR group. I'm like, you guys, you're used to working behind the scenes. You know, you ought to get out there on Twitter and meet the reporters that you talk to on the phone and you know, hang out with them. Is there anything, and Sunshine, you're a PR person, and, mm-hmm. and we've all worked with PR mm-hmm. folks.
PR people, I'm not your typical PR person because I used to be a reporter and I'm kind of a loudmouth anyway. They tend to be behind the scenes people. And so then they get on Twitter and they're trying to be behind the scenes. But how do you be behind the scenes, Z, on this open forum?
If you're doing everything in public with your pants hanging down. Yeah,
your pants hanging. I mean, so it's actually, I think, one of the biggest challenges. And ironically, in a lot of cases, PR people and PR firms are tasked with social media in-house and on the agency side because it seems like a fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sure, it's quite difficult for them because this is not a match with what they've done before. Their whole thing has been establishing these quiet little networks with people, doing things in a certain way.
I would argue that sometimes I have seen, and not to point fingers, some PR folks see these as push out channels. So they're like, we don't have to interface with people at all.
Right.
We don't have to build a network of relationships. We're going to blast things out and think of social platforms as distribution mechanisms only. And again, this is not everyone for sure, but it's the difference. I've been talking internally a lot about how one of the strengths of PR is that kind of moment of momentum, that big pop. And then one of the strengths of social media is the long burn. And I think that there is space and much joy to be found in the middle. But anyway, so a slightly different take. I see the PR challenge as a little bit different, I think. But so I'm interested that you both see it as that behind the scenes quality.
I think I'm going to tell my PR folks that if you want to get to know the reporters that you're working with in a deeper way, more than just pitching them stories, then that would be a legitimate goal to go on Twitter for, to join that community of technology trade reporters.
Yeah, and you know what? When I first got on Twitter, I was really worried that somehow the reporters would feel that I was cozying up to them by interacting with them on Twitter. I was sincerely worried about that. And it's funny now, isn't it? I mean, because I was conversing with them and treating them like human beings, which they really liked. And of course it was easier to pitch them a story later. It's like, it's a no-brainer, right? I think at first I was worried that they'd be like, oh, you know.
It is surprising. We've talked about the playfulness. It is surprising. Most people on Twitter are very approachable. So I don't know why that's surprising, because most people are actually very approachable once you approach them. Well, folks, I think we should probably bring this podcast to a close. We all love Twitter, and so stopping at an hour is probably difficult. I think we've had some really good tips from Sunshine. Sunshine McGrabby, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Sunshine Mug on Twitter, is that the best way to reach you?
Oh, definitely.
Or Facebook or
I'm LinkedIn. Sunshine Mug across the board.
That's such good planning. So envious. Yep.
Sunshine Mug on Facebook if you want to get that cozy with me, and Sunshine Mug on LinkedIn and Twitter, of course.
Amy, Matt, any final words on this whole Twittosphere thing?
We hit it. I think Sunshine brought a highlight to a different approach to how to get on Twitter that I went a different route. I love her route. I think it all leads to the same thing where you're being more like yourself and you're being sincere with people. So it's nice to see that while the beginning can be different, the ends are the same.
And I love the idea that whether you think you're a natural or not, there's a way in for you to find your goals and to keep it up. So I think that's very inspiring. And also for anybody who's sort of looking to take their game up that extra level, you get out of it what you put into it.
Awesome. Well, that's been our session on Twitter. In the absence of any other catchphrase, this has been the Geek Whisperers, and we'll see you all next week. You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as Jay Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
And so I'm like, sure, bring leg warmers to work. No problem. And that was my way in. And it was so ridiculous.